Welcome back to another episode of Author Conversations. I'm Johnny Foster, and my co-host, Jenny, is here.
Hello, I'm Jenny.
You know, I should have asked before we started recording this, do you want to say your last name on the air? You don't have to.
It doesn't matter.
Is it still Tyler?
It is not, but that is what
I think you got married about it now.
I tell everybody at work my last name is still Tyler.
There you go, see?
Because so, it was too confusing
so
for
this, we'll just use Tyler then.
That's fine.
So in case you did not download or listen to the episode explaining the new format, this will be the last time I explain it. So listen up.
It won't be. We'll explain it again. Don't worry.
Jenny will explain it again. Where this used to be an interview show, Jenny and I now discuss the authors and their books. Every once in a while, we'll have an author on for an interview or drop in an audio clip from the authors. Sound good?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Why are you asking me? I'm a part of this.
Well, I know. I just.
No, it sounds great.
So everybody knows that we're like in an accord, not a Honda, in an agreement.
We could do the podcast in a Honda. That'd be fine. They're pretty spacious now.
Yeah, they are. I'm with him. But let's get to our book and author. So this is a story of love. Weird love.
Weird love.
Betrayal. And culminates with two dead people in a farmhouse kitchen.
And listen, I am all about a love triangle. Those are my okay. favorite kinds of books. And this is the epitome of a love triangle.
Yeah, this is... Hey, this is kind of a messed up version of a love triangle.
They're all messed up versions.
No, Jenny, you're wrong. It's not a love triangle. At one point, it's a quadrangle.
True. So, we'll get into that.
Geometry. Jenny, tell us about the author and the book.
So the book is The Hoyt Wallace Murder Mystery in Herkimer County by James M. Grainer. And I'm actually not sure how to pronounce that last name. So, James, I apologize if I butchered that. But a little bit about James. He is the Herkimer County historian, a retired high school history teacher, and the author of several books and articles on local history. He's the president of the Friends of the Historic Herkimer County, an organization working to preserve the historic 1834 jail, which once held Roxalana Druce, Chester Gillette, and John C. Wallace. He still lives in Herkimer, New York, with his wife Teresa and their two spoiled dogs, Squirty and Bonnie.
Do you think that dog did something to make them name it Squirty?
I want to say yes, but it would have to have been when he was really young, right?
Maybe it's just like he's a squirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. So let's hop right into the book, shall we? Let's see. The book focuses on a murder mystery that occurs in 1901. But wouldn't you know, there was a grisly event that took place before this event. And this murder mystery would not be the only one to make headlines. There would be yet another one after the Hoyt Wallace event that would make national scandalous headlines. But back to the first event I mentioned in December 1885. I don't know why I said it that way. There was the case of Roxalana Druce. Roxanne. There was a lot in this case, and I'm not so sure she deserved her ending. Did you read the intro to the book about that case?
I'm going to be honest. I did, yes.
I'm not so sure she should have had her ending that she had. But that's not the story we're focusing on now. Buy the book to read that part if you would like to come to your own conclusion about that. So let's talk about this case. So keep in mind as we get into the heart, the meat, the eye of the storm, if you will, that this takes place in 1901. That this country has seen these kind of tragedies before. And some of the same players, or this county rather, has seen these kind of tragedies before. So some of the players from that time may show up in this story. A little bit. You just got to pay attention to see if you see them. Now, the author does a great job at explaining the background of the area, the lineage of families. He talks a lot about the intermarrying of the original settlers.
Now, you say lineage of families.
We're talking about a line in some cases, I think.
Mostly one family in certain cases.
Yes. I do got to take issue. We talked about it off mic. There was a line.
The Tunnicliffs.
The Tunnicliff family tree had branched out like a mighty oak. I don't know if I would agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know if there was so much branching as rooting around internally.
Now, look, I'm from the South. I've done my family tree. And because my mama was born in Alabama.
I did not think that that's where you were going to go with that sentence. I have done my family.
I'm not a tuna cliff. So, but it did happen with some of my family members, as it turns out, on my dad's side. And he was thinking it was going to be my mom's side because her people's from Alabama. So that was kind of weird to see. And the Mainers, that's all I'll say about that.
I feel like I'm going to need some of that story off mic later.
Well, it's just cousins marrying cousins. So you thought that was strange too?
I did, yeah.
All right.
It's basically an entire town of Tuna Cliffs.
Which is an interesting name in and of itself.
Yes. I think one of the family members migrated there first.
Yep.
And he thought that it was such a great place that he brought in the rest of his family. And then his family just continued to grow with more and more children.
Hired a boat.
Yeah.
Remember? A ship. Yeah. Sorry, Captain Jack. So he was serious about settling in that area, and he wanted his family there too. But you know what? Even though this goes all the way back to the 1750s, we don't need to know all that history for our conversation.
True.
We should start on a day a little five-year-old Arvilla.
Is it Arvilla? Or is it Arvia?
We could
I would assume it's Arvilla.
We could go the Elvis route with Priscilla and call Arvilla, as you say, Sola.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go Arvilla.
I think it's Arvilla. Yeah. I have a neighbor named Arvella. So, same.
Yeah, we'll go with that. So she walks up to a farmhouse with her older sister, Aretha, and her recently widowed mother, Jane, who needed work to support her daughters, as she was a widow at this time. By the way, Jane had a normal name, then she gives her girls names like Arvilla and Aretha.
And Aretha should not be confused with Aretha. It is O-R-E-T-H-A. Aretha.
Yes.
But maybe it's pronounced Aretha.
I'm going to go with Aretha, because I did Hooked on Phonics when I was a kid. Back to the story. The farm they arrive to is owned by one David Wallace and his son, John C. C like the letter. The Wallaces were considered wealthy farmers. David had lost his wife. This is the father, David. Remember, there's a David Wallace who's the dead. John C's David's son. So David had lost his wife and was looking for help to maintain the house, cooking, cleaning, etc. And Jane was an answer to his prayers.
So when they arrived, just to kind of start this conversation out, Arvilla was five.
Yeah.
How old was John C?
I think I have that later in my notes.
Okay.
Maybe it was a good bit older.
It was a good bit older. He helped a lot with the farm.
Yes, he did. It's creepy.
A little bit.
I mean, I don't know if that was normal back then. I feel like that probably wouldn't have been that normal.
I feel like not as children.
Yeah. Because John C. is grown. He's like in his 20s.
Mm-hmm.
He's maybe 15 years or more.
I think it's 15.
Yeah, 15 years, yeah. This girl's senior.
Yes.
It's 5-year-olds.
She's five.
And we'll see all what happens here in a second. David also took a liking to 5-year-old Avila. This is the dead. Now, his liking wasn't the way his son's liking was going to be later on. That's not where this triangle quadrangle comes in.
Yes, he very much saw her as a daughter that he never had.
Yes. And he loved having the children laughter back in his home again after so much tragedy. In fact, David treated her, like you said, like she was his own. After years for working for David Wallace, Jane would accept a proposal of marriage from David. And it was happily ever after. It was not. It's going to be bad. Arvilla is able to get an education in a one-room schoolhouse. As she grows, she becomes well-known and well-liked. She has many talents that she was remembered for, but as grateful as she was to David Wallace. Do you think about The Office when I say David Wallace?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. As grateful as she was to David Wallace, she wanted more than what she considered to be just a simple life on the farm. She didn't want to keep milking cows, picking eggs. Her mother had other ideas because Jane's oldest, Aretha. Not married well in Jane's eyes, and would actually go on to be married 3 times and would move away all the way to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Which is such a scandalous thing for her to be married 3 times.
Yeah, she divorced twice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, wait, did she divorce?
Yeah.
Then a husband died, and then she remarried.
Yeah, but divorce is such a...
Oh, yeah, has rules. See?
Yeah. And especially for, I think she chose the divorce versus her husband kicking her out.
Yeah. I don't think that would have flown in New York at this time.
Yeah.
At all. So, Jane wanted a villa to have a better match and life. Who better in Jane's eyes than old John C?
15 years her senior.
Yes.
Again.
She's got a little bit of a Brady Bunch situation going on, but they were far apart in age, which the whole Brady Bunch thing was weird to me, Greg and Marcia.
Yes.
Used to have to watch that at after school care when it was raining outside or too cold to go outside. They would flip on old TBS, and there was the Brady Bunch. Don't really like that show.
No, it's kind of a weird one.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
So, except where Greg and Marcia were close in age, like we said, John C. was...
15 years her senior.
Got to keep driving that point home, I feel like. So when he first saw La Villa, she was 5 and he was 20. Yeah.
Which is very creepy.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
I know it was a different time, but I kind of feel like in the, you know, late 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, I always think about the fact that they then grew up together. John C. was obviously already grown. But they grew up as siblings after that, essentially.
Oh, yes.
So he not only was she 5 when he met her, but he also saw her as a sister for the rest of, you know, her childhood.
Avila did not give in to her mother's nagging at first. And she was nagging her. We can honestly say
yes.
That.
Which is such a weird thing. Like, I mean, I guess it makes sense for a mother to want her daughter, especially in that time period, to marry a wealthy man. And, you know, a wealthy man that they know well because it's her, you know, son, essentially.
Yeah, it's her. You know, you're like a mother to me. It'd be an honor to marry my wife's sister. You know what I mean? It's like, I know I did a Southern accent for New York, but hey, there's rednecks everywhere.
This is true.
You know what I mean?
My husband is from New York.
You're calling Jack a redneck?
Maybe.
She didn't give in to her mom's nagging at first, though she did feel the pressure. She met a man from a nearby farm, and in what wouldn't be the last case of her taking these measures, Arvilla packed up a trunk, went off with the young man, and tried to catch a train to marriage and a new life. Oh. David and Jane somehow, though, caught onto her plan. It doesn't say how they did that.
Yeah.
My guess is they were like, what's that dust going down the road? Oh, it's Arvilla. So they caught on to her plan, and they caught up with a young couple. David held Arvilla by the arm and threatened to prosecute the young man. Eventually, Arvilla gave in to her stepfather and stepmother and her mother's wants. Mother's, not stepmother's wants. See how confusing it is?
It is. It's very confusing.
And you know who she ended up marrying?
John C.
That's right. John C.
He's 15 years her senior.
Sister, I would be honored to be your husband. Yeah. After marriage, John C. pretty much takes over the farm so his father and stepmother can retire. The parents even build a little retirement house in a nearby community. Arvilla would keep the household running orderly on the farm, just as her mother had done for many years. She would also make some money of her own, which is important, I think, to remember,
mm-hmm.
by selling eggs and churned butter. Now let's bring in old Ben Hoyt.
Oh, Ben.
Old Benny. He was a seasonal worker. It was around this time that Ben would leave the farm for his first time. He was a seasonal hired hand, so that was kind of normal for workers to only stay for a little bit of time, leave, and come back.
Mm-hmm.
But Big Ben had dreams of his own this time. He wanted his own farm with a woman that he would become his wife, Mabel. Compared to Arvilla and Aritha, Mabel's pretty normal.
It's a pretty good name.
If you hear birds, we are on our back porch. My former podcasting studio is now my second son's room, so enjoy the birds. We're enjoying the birds. There's like some Carolina wrens out here. Anyway, just so you know what you're hearing, we want to draw you a picture. Now, Ben wanted to own a farm of his own with Mabel, but those dreams were dashed when Mabel would die on December 21st, 1897. And at first, some suspected foul play on Ben's part, but Mabel died from peritonitis and consumption. Jenny, I had no idea what peritonitis was.
I also didn't.
Did you look it up too?
No.
Okay. But I looked it up. It's inflammation of the peritoneum, typically caused by bacterial infection, either via the blood or rupture of abdominal organ.
So what is a peritoneum?
That is actually next to my notes, because I didn't know what a peritoneum was, so I searched this definition. It's the serous membrane lining the cavity of the abdomen and covering the abdominal organs.
That is not what I would have guessed. I definitely thought it had something to do with the mouth.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
So it's good to know in case it ever comes up in trivia. Now, in April 1898, Orvilla's mother would die, and eventually Ben would make his way back to the Wallace farm to work as a hand. John C. was sympathetic to Ben's loss and accepted him back to work as he would other seasonal hands. With Mama gone, though, things were about to get interesting on the farm. It's kind of been dirty on the farm. Real nasty.
I would like to point out, though, that I find it very interesting that David, remember the father, David.
Yeah.
He hired Jane as like a housekeeper maid, right? But then neither David nor John C. hired another housekeeper.
Yeah.
I find that to be weird. They're like wealthy people. Why wouldn't they?
You know, they. When he said wealthy, then they talk about the house and things of that nature. It made me think they were wealthy for that area. You know, they're not exactly robber barons and living the Gilded Age life.
I mean, yes. But at the same time, I think we'll get into this a little bit later, but I think that they had considerable amount of money.
They did. So I mean, maybe that's just like what was expected, you know, even for them and that family.
Yeah.
Jenny, I don't know if you know this or not, but this family does a lot of things different than what other families do.
This is true.
This is probably the one thing that I wasn't really nitpicking at. I was just like, whatever, that's what they wanted to do.
Well, so I read into it in that because they didn't hire a maid or a housekeeper, that kind of pushed the transgressions the way that they did. And we'll kind of get into that.
That is a really good point, because then she could have been more of a lady of the house.
Mm-hmm. Instead, I think that she felt a little bit like a house servant.
Instead of John C. coming in at the end of the day, smelling to high heaven, asking where's my dinner.
Yep.
Well, actually, it would be supper, because technically dinner is lunch. So I know people knew that out there or not. My mom's mom would always make sure I had that right.
Like
whatever.
A relic from our English past.
Yeah. she was something else. So, when she was looking for a way to escape, because she's tired of working on the farm, tired of being in the house, she would find an escape in one Ben Hoyt. Arvilla longed for life away from a farm. She longed for a big city. It would appear that Arvilla and Ben were also acquainted, maybe from before he was on the farm. She seemed to be very happy to have him on the farm again. They were close in age. They could comfort each other over the loss of their loved ones. Over time, though, the neighbors, the nosy Nellies, started to think there was a bit more to the friendship between the two than meets the eye. Proof of this came when John C. discovered his wife, Havilla, in Ben's bed. And he said, "Hey, that's my wife's sister." "What are you doing?" That's what I imagine he exclaimed. John C. had to think of what to do. Divorce would be an embarrassment, so he did the next, in his mind, not necessarily in everybody else's mind, but in his mind, the next logical thing. He moved out of his own bedroom to another bedroom. He did not even fire Ben Hoyt. Supposedly, this was better than hurting his image in a divorce. I don't know about that.
I also don't know about that. So another term that came up in this book that I hadn't heard before was yellow journalism.
Yeah. And it says like it was the age of it. I'm like, are we still in that age today?
We are definitely still in that age. Yellow journalism is where they exaggerate, the story, in order to sell the magazine and the newspaper a little bit more. And it was just kind of the height of everything at the time, because that was basically the only entertainment they had was to, make fun of their neighbors who were getting divorced.
Like, newspaper men would go in there to report on it.
Yes. But it does seem like John C. was a little too casual about this situation.
Yes. He was beyond casual. Like, I'm going to let you do your thing in our house.
Yes, in our marital bed.
My question is, even though he didn't fire Ben Hoyt, like, I don't feel like there was a lot about, well, did he, like, just keep sleeping with Arvilla in that bed?
I would have to assume so.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were in that situation, if you were Ben and Arvilla.
And he didn't fire Ben at all, I mean.
I would think that him moving out of the room and not firing Ben and not, well, I guess not pushing for divorce is a moot point here, but he would, it's almost like John C. was giving them permission.
That's exactly what he was doing. He was hoping it was just going to, maybe
fizzle out. Maybe
Sawyer is like still young.
Yeah.
This is going to just go away. But as we'll see, it's just going to get more complicated.
I also had another thought that I don't know if it's appropriate to say on the podcast.
Well, let's see here. We're at 21 minutes and 42 seconds. I'm going to mark it just in case. Just go ahead.
But again, John C. is 15 years Arvilla senior, right? So perhaps, and I think that we kind of get a glimpse of Arvilla a little later, which we'll talk about later.
Are you saying there might not have been a blue pill around at the time?
Yes. Okay. Maybe he couldn't keep up with her, like, ravaging appetite.
You're right. We do talk about that later at the time. In a letter, she writes, kind of saying that, which, you know, had to make him feel good if that ever came up in court. Came up now. John C. wonders, you know, Arvilla saw this as a chance to get away, basically, though. When he kind of takes his hands off the situation, says, do whatever you want to do. Because she still wasn't happy on the farm, which I think kind of also isn't a big issue here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little wrong along with your suggestion. So she's going to run off with Ben in a new life. When John C. returns home on the day that she runs away with Ben after working on the farm, one September night in 1899, he notices things from around the house. They're missing. Bed sheets. Took his bed sheets.
She took the rug. I found that one to be very strange. Like, of all the things to grab in a hurry, let me roll up the rug.
I mean, they were kind of expensive back then.
I mean, they're still expensive.
Here's the thing, too. Here's something else she took. Now, remember we talked about her selling butter, churned butter, and eggs. So I think that envelope was the money she was saving up that she takes, because she takes an envelope with $1,200 in it.
And she does mention later that that is what she is owed.
Yep.
And so I actually looked it up, because $1,200 doesn't seem like a lot of money to us now, but $1,200 in the late 1800s actually amounted to about, what, $40,000?
I have $44,389.30.
So specific.
And then I looked it up yesterday, and it was more, because I guess inflation is like hitting in. Within, like, I wrote these notes on Friday, so over the weekend.
Great.
Yeah, it went up more.
For us.
All right, so of course, John C. wonders where she went. He finds out neighbors saw her putting her belongings into a wagon. Hey, why don't you tell a guy what's going on? I feel like he shouldn't have to come. Especially if they've been nosy this whole time. He knows they're nosy. Just go ahead and, you know, be good about it, I guess.
Right.
Let's bring out something positive of your nosiness. He later found out that this was driven by Ben, who had rented said wagon. The runaways boarded a train and would wind up first in Kalamazoo to visit Aretha. And then Detroit.
The big city.
The big rock city, according to Kiss.
Which I didn't know until this book that Detroit was known as the Ellis Island of the, Midwest?
How that? What?
Yeah, a lot of, I think, Polish and German settlers went over there. And they, I guess, they came from New York and had to cross Lake Erie. And so then it became known as the Ellis Island because they...
So they skipped processing it. Like, if you were going to go to the Midwest, they would say, okay, you stay on the boat. We're going to send you up these locks and these canals up to the Great Lakes. Okay, I didn't know that. And I learned something today. I'm going to use that for trivia, I'm sure, one day. So, John C. calmly.
Still too calmly.
John C. decides it's time for a divorce. Divorce was not easy back in those days in the Empire State. The only means at that time for a divorce was to prove adultery. And he procures a lawyer who tells him he has to prove he tried to look for his wife, that he could not find her, and he must put an ad once a week in local newspapers for 6 weeks with his intent and to try to draw her back to the area.
Keeping in mind that this is the era of the yellow journalism, so having to put an ad out for his lost wife for 6 weeks is kind of a big deal. I feel like that's going to get the talk of the town going.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's not, apparently not much else to talk about. Herkimer. How does it have two papers?
Because there's nothing else to talk about.
And there's like so many different opinions. But you probably have enough to fill up like half a paper if you had to put this kind of stuff in it.
Yeah, but imagine having two different opinions on the matter.
But if she doesn't return, if Arvilla didn't return after all those newspaper ads with Mrs. Kitchen's cat running away, he can procure a divorce.
Which is also interesting because, I mean, he does go on to procure the divorce. And while obviously Arvilla ran away, so she, it would seem, would be happy to be divorced, I think it's weird that she doesn't need to be present or to sign any paperwork claiming that she is aware of the divorce.
Well, I mean, I think that's why he had to provide proof that he, remember, because he writes Orthella.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I hadn't seen her.
Aretha?
What, yeah.
Combining Orthella. Names
now. Othello. So, he writes, you know, her sister. She doesn't say anything. I can't remember what her sister's name is anymore. And she, you know, says, I haven't seen her. I don't know where she is. So that's, hey, I'm looking for her. She's not coming back. Put the ad in the paper for 6 weeks. I mean, she kind of ran away, so
yeah.
She could have. I think she knew what was kind of what was going on, but she still wants that big city life right now. Right now. And so even though
she's still in her 20s.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
So John C. gets his divorce, even finds time to start courting a new friend.
And how old is that friend?
I don't remember.
She is 23, everyone.
How old is he now?
He's got to be almost 40 at this point. He likes him young.
But if he meets some, I feel like it's different. It's a lot different if he meets her when she's over 18.
Yes, and also not his sister.
Not his sister wife. So Arvilla in this time is discovering life in the big city with Ben after her divorce is not what she thought it would be.
Yep. Ben, as it turns out, really likes the local bar scene.
That's not all he likes. She also goes out looking for Ben at some point in time because she's relying on all the money she has.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's making and what Ben's supposed to be bringing in to make everything work. But he's spending that money, like you said.
Yep.
In the bars. And cavorting with some ladies.
Yeah. Which at one point, you know, he's got his big dreams as well. He talks about wanting to open up his own establishment. But he doesn't want it to be like the local breweries where all the, you know, poor people hang out. He wants to have a fine establishment for...
where he might hang out.
For the elite of Detroit to come and sip his fineries.
Yep. Hey, big dreams. You got to have a plan to make it happen, though.
Yeah, especially if you don't have any money.
So, in late summer of 1900, a letter arrives at the Wallace Farm from Arvilla. The old man David was happy to hear from Arvilla, her, you know, stepfather, father-in-law. He still loved her like a daughter and wanted her back. John C. was suspicious, but an arrangement was made where she would become a housekeeper like her mother had done. John C. gives into his father's wishes, yet he makes it clear to Arvilla that there would be no going back to the way things were between them. She's just going to be his sister now.
Slash housekeeper.
Yes.
Even though, again, he did not want to hire a housekeeper when he was married to her, but now that she... not married to him, he's like, we can hire a housekeeper again.
Yeah. Well, that's how you get. That's how she's coming back. That's how she gets into the picture. So, Arvilla would have her own room and be paid $3 a week. I didn't look to see how much that was. I didn't really think to.
I didn't either.
Before she would return, John would ask his ex-wife, but still sister-in-law, where his ex-wife's sister-in-law, where Ben Hoyt was. She said she didn't know, or excuse me, John would ask his ex-wife, but still sister,
yes,
where Ben Hoyt was. She said she did not know. In October 28th, Arvilla returns to her old home.
But she also had to wire him to ask him to send money for her ticket.
Yes. And I think he kind of was expecting that.
Yeah.
If I'm, you know. As you can imagine, people start talking again, wondering what to make of this situation at the Hollis Farm.
Wallace.
The Wallace Farm. Hollis is my uncle. Some, my great uncle. Some judged our villa harshly. Others found it almost brave to return, considering the circumstances she left. Some judged John C. Others thought maybe he had accepted her return so he could have someone care for his aging father. Around 4 months later, guess who shows up, Jenny?
It's Ben.
Oh, he's back in the picture. Hey, Ben, how you been doing? Been messing anybody else's life up, lady buddy? Lately, buddy? John C. actually allows Ben into his house.
Again.
He comes up. John C. comes home one night. He hears somebody in the shadows by his door.
Mm-hmm.
That's suspicious anyway. That'll get you an A beaten. You know what I mean? But Ben gives a sob story about not being able to find work. And John C. actually takes him back on after Arvilla swears she did not know he was coming and that he would leave soon. I think she knew he was coming.
I think she knew.
Because she was writing letters with his sister. Benny Boy actually stays all winter, though.
John, I think that was something, too, like, everybody, you know, in the book they talk about how good of a man John C. was. And, like, he's a very kind person. And he knew that Ben wouldn't be able to find any work throughout the winter because he's a seasonal hand. And so I think he was pretty, like, adamant about, like, you can hang out here through the winter, you can help, but the minute it hits spring, you got to go because then you can find work elsewhere.
I guess I'm not a good guy because if I was in that situation, Ben shows back up. Hey, I might not be able to live through the winter. You know, I might freeze to death and starve. That sounds like a son of be solving itself, the problem that I have with you. It's probably going to get solved pretty quick if that happens. Thanks for letting me know, pal. So that's just me. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
So Ben actually wouldn't leave until April 6th, which I think is a little bit into springtime.
Mm-hmm.
Arvilla told her ex-husband's stepbrother, that's what I'm going to call him now, that he was gone for good this time. No more Ben, she said, but that would not be the case. Letters would fly back and forth between Arvilla and Ben, and in April 1901, Ben prepared to go to the Wallace Farm for Arvilla. Ben visits his sister, Gertie, who still corresponds with Arvilla. That's strange in and of itself. Gertie claimed to tell him that it may be dangerous to return to the Wallace Farm. As John C. has stated, and she knew this from a letter from Arvilla, if he came up here, meaning the farm again, he would have to step over both their dead bodies.
Yep.
John was not worried, as he had, or Ben was not worried, as he had a new pistol. The whole trip to the farm, Ben drank.
And drank.
And drank.
And drank.
One night in a place called Mohawk, Ben actually drunkenly decided to target practice in town. The police chief arrests him, then astonishingly releases him after Ben pays a fine. He also gives him his liquor back and the pistol.
And it was because when he asked what he was doing with the pistol, he said that he was returning it to its rightful owner and was going to get paid, I think, $25 for its return. And so the police chief was like, oh, that's a good man. Okay, off you go. And gave him both his liquor and his gun back.
I mean, which I think this all could have not been a thing at all.
I think that police chief later gets chastised in the book for releasing him with his liquor and his gun.
You know how many times I've been chastised?
I assume multiple times a day.
Yeah. So, on May 4th, Ben would make his way back to the Wallace Farm. John C. would see him walking across the fields as he chopped wood. Chop, chop, chop. He would tell Arvilla, and she says, I'm sure that's not Ben.
Okay.
John C. would lose sight of Ben. But when he would return inside the house at around 2:30, who's sitting at the kitchen table?
It's Ben.
Oh, it's Ben. So, I'm going to read a little bit from the book just so we know what's about to happen here. Naturally suspicious of Ben Hoyt, Wallace continued to scan the horizon in between each fell of his axe. At 2:30, he returned to the house, only to discover that he had been looking in the wrong place. Seated at the kitchen table was Ben Hoyt. Why do you keep hanging around here? Asked an expirated John C. I have come to do business, said Hoyt. What kind of business? That's my business. I think it's probably the wife's sister, ex-wife's sister. I kept you all winter, said Wallace, who was now losing his patience. Just now, losing his patience. Right. It's time you went to work. If you have any business to do, I want you to do it and get out. I'm not going to make the obvious joke. I'll do my business when I get ready. Tension and tempers escalated quickly, and this was quickly followed by name-calling and profanity. Kind of sounds like a fun time.
Yeah.
A little bit. An emotional Hoyt, having fortified himself with a pint of liquid courage earlier that day, insisted that he would not leave without Arvilla. John Wallace, finding it impossible to argue with a drunk, demanded that Hoyt leave his premises. At the height of the verbal encounter, old David Wallace, having returned home from visiting a neighbor, entered the kitchen and seated himself in the corner while Arvilla openly sobbed. In this chaos, barbs and insults went back and forth for almost an hour. A compromise between the three was out of the question. Someone had to yield. That question was, who would it be? There was a new sheriff in Herkimer County, Daniel Strobel, and coincidentally, his brother was also the coroner.
Coincidence, right.
Sheriff Strobel had a brother who was the county coroner, and like I said, on the afternoon of May 4th, may it be with you, 1901, the sheriff was preparing for a vacation when the phone rang. So I'm going to read a little bit more from here, just real quick. Actually, it's going to be a little bit. So after receiving, he takes a while, because you can't just get on a good road and head out. He heads out to the farm. It takes a long time to get there. So Strobel places a series of phone calls before he takes off. The first was to District Attorney George W. Ward in Dulgeville. It was followed by calls to the coroner's office and lastly to photographer. This is really interesting, I thought. Albert Zintzmaster in Herkimer. Almost as an afterthought, Strobel went upstairs and told his wife that their planned vacation would have to wait. So it takes 2 hours to reach the farm in Jordanville. For the two lawmen, locating the Wallace place was relatively easy as buggies and automobiles lined both sides of the road near the farm. After parking their automobile, the two walked by a small crowd and made their way up the walkway that led to the front door. As the front door was open, Strobel and Kelly walked in unannounced and went directly to the kitchen. Of the dozens or so men in the kitchen, one stepped forward and extended his hand and introduced himself as John C. Wallace. He says, "I suppose you've come for me." Taken aback by Wallace's congenial welcome, Strobel was momentarily speechless. "That is all right," said Wallace reassuringly. "There lies my dead wife, shot by Ben Hoyt. Sister wife. And there lies Hoyt, shot by me." Strobel couldn't believe his eyes or his ears. Did Wallace confess? In the corner near the woodshed door was the slumped over body of a man. In the middle of the kitchen floor was a Victorian era fainting couch. Got one of those upstairs. It was in my family's family heirloom. Lying prone on the couch was the body of a woman whose arms had been folded across her chest. Casually walking over to the kitchen table, Wallace picked up a pistol and presented it to Strobel. Kind of feel like that would not fly nowadays.
No.
You just walk over here with my pistol, you know, and pick it up yourself. That would not be good. "Here's a revolver I used," he said. When asked where the other murder weapon was, Wallace said he hadn't bothered to look for it, but it was sure it had to be near the body of Hoyt. After surrendering the weapon, Wallace briefly described to Sheriff what had happened. Wallace gave a thumbnail sketch of his wife and hired man running off to Michigan, his divorce and her eventual return to this house, and the role of a housekeeper and caregiver to his father. When Hoyt left in his employ in April, Wallace said he had thought that was the last he'd see of him, but sometime between 1 and 2, he saw Hoyt crossing one of the distant fields. "I went in," said Wallace, "and told my wife that Hoyt had come back. She acted nervous and pretended to be afraid. She said Hoyt would kill her. Shortly after Hoyt came in the kitchen, I told him to go away and get work elsewhere. It was being spring, he could easily find work. He promised to go once he said, and then said he couldn't, or wouldn't." For the next several after hours, the two argued back and forth. Finally, according to Wallace, Arvilla had her fill. It was understood between her and myself that in case Hoyt came back, she was to go away to get rid of him. I left the kitchen and went to my room to get a newspaper, which contained the railroad timetable. My father is in the kitchen with him. I was delayed in finding the newspaper. Before I got it, I heard two shots and screams from my wife. Seizing a revolver, which lay on top of the safe in my room, I rushed back to the kitchen. As I approached my wife, he shot me. As I approached my wife, she said, "He shot me." Hoyt was moving toward the door. He flourished a revolver at me. Then he changed it from his right to his left hand, tried to open the door, and as he did so, he fired at me. Then I fire on him, shooting 3 times, after which he fell to the floor. I went at once to the assistance of my wife. I held her in my arms and asked, "Villa, don't you know me?" Well, he did call her Villa. I forgot all that. She motioned as if she did shortly after he expired in my arms, and then I laid her on the sofa. So that's his version of what happened. And Jenny, we're not going to give away what happens in the trial. What?
Your wife.
We're not going to give away what happened in the trial. We are going to, though, kind of see what we think about this. What do you take of all this? What do you think actually happened?
Oh, man.
Because what we think doesn't give away the ending of the book, because I might have something different that I thought happened. So,
can we talk a little bit about the trial? Mostly just about two other people.
Yeah.
So, I found it to be very interesting because John C., when he gives his account, kind of tells a few lies. But then you have two other witnesses that they call forward. One, Andrew Hoyt, who is Ben's brother. And then also, I forget his name, Shoop of sorts. Samuel Shoop, I believe.
Yeah.
Both of whom claimed, and I think at least one of them had a letter from Arvilla, stating that she had come to their rooms at midnight in her nightdress to perform some non-marital actions.
You know, I thought I had that in the notes, but I didn't see. I might have skipped past that.
And so, to me, it kind of seems like Arvilla might have been a little bit of a floozy.
Yeah, because we did talk about earlier about it might have been a quadrangle, not a triangle.
Yeah.
And that's because, like, during the divorce proceeding, that she was, yeah, I even had it here and I skipped past it. So you had been, you had Byron Payne called up, which introduces Samuel Shoop, right? Mm-hmm. It turned out Arvilla had an affair with this guy, too, is what I had here. Shoop even had a note from Arvilla, which she tells, she states she is remorseful about how things will end up with Shoop. As she absconds with Ben Hoyt, she tells Shoop in a letter she must find love. Did you mention this part while I was looking for this yet?
No.
Because this is where the blue pill thing might be.
Yeah.
A woman craves love, affection, and kindness, but how few men can see it. A kind word and a little petting goes a long way.
And a little petting. But yes. So to me, I kind of took that Arvilla honestly might have been a little bit manipulative.
Yeah.
It kind of seemed like she went after men to get what she wanted, right? And so I think Shoop couldn't provide for her. She didn't like what John C. was giving her. So then she went with Ben and they ran off together. But then Ben stopped giving her what she deemed a good life. And so then she came back to John C. And somewhere in there was Andrew Hoyt also. But also, Aretha, her sister, having been divorced twice, makes me wonder what Jane did to these girls to raise them in such a modern way of thinking. But that's neither here nor there.
I don't know if being manipulative is a modern way of thinking.
Not so much manipulative, but more just that they all kind of slept around a little bit, it seemed.
Yeah. I think that probably happened more than we think.
I suppose.
But they just didn't talk about it like we do. I mean, you have the yellow journalism. When it comes out, they talk about
it. They talk about it.
But when it's not out, they don't talk about it.
Right.
I mean, they might, you know, like the neighbors, you know, like think, you know, when they the neighbors started thinking that our villain Ben might have something more going on.
Yeah.
Did we talk about the picture?
Which one?
So the crime scene photo is one of the earliest crime scene photos in, like, in our nation's history.
Yep.
Which is really cool. You can get it if you buy the book and see it. I don't know, we might put it on social media.
No, I think they should have to buy the book.
Okay. Yeah, don't use the internet to look for it.
Definitely not.
Buy the book.
It's not a thing.
But we don't want to, I know you're still talking about the trial, but we won't say too much more about it, but it's just to me, it just seems like there was a lot of wrong on both sides, on all sides.
Yes, agreed.
So.
I agree. But I don't know, I think it's also fishy, you know, in that crime scene photo, when the coroner and the sheriff show up, that Arvilla was on the couch. Ben was in the corner, and it seemed like everything had been cleaned up, right? I think it says that he had kind of washed the blood off of her. He had washed the floor. And this happens in the book before the trial happens, I believe. And to me, that is always suspicious.
It is suspicious, but...
But then he does admit to just... He admits to murder at the same time.
I don't know if it's self-defense, but... I mean, there is something in the trial that happens that makes me think, okay, yeah, he, you know, more of what John C. thinks has happened, that's probably more of how it went, not 100% accurate, not 100% truthful.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also probably going to have the court of public opinion on your side.
Yes.
So, especially in that town where people know him, or in that county, town.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. He was so trusted by the sheriff didn't even put handcuffs on him, lock a cell or anything. Told him he was he's the model prisoner. Is what he says. So, anyway, that's what I have for the story. You got anything else for the trial or anything to add?
No, I mean, I feel like, once again, John C. was very, like, he was too calm.
Yeah.
You know, the same with his whole divorce, his whole wife cheating on him situation. It seems like he doesn't have the ability to, like, express emotion. In any way, according to the book, which in my brain of like show, you know, watching shows like Dexter, to me, it just means that he's a complete psychopath. But that, you know, but that's just me, like, you know, projecting my own.
A little bit too much Showtime, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be right. That's the whole thing about it. Now it's all just, it's history. I think it's 2020 looking back. And we know more about things like this happening now than we did back then.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story. And if you want the whole story, you have to get the book. Jenny, where's the books available at? Do you know where we can find this book at?
Where?
Yeah, where can we find this book at to buy?
So it is available at ArcadiaPublishing.com and anywhere books are sold.
Yes, and if your bookstore doesn't have it, you can ask for it. You can go to any independent bookstore you want. You can go to Barnes & Noble and ask for it, and it can get ordered for you. So I think that's going to wrap it up. You know, almost every Monday, we have new titles being published. Don't really do that in December, but the other 11 months of the year, Jenny, we got some new titles coming up. And these new titles being published, to see what they are, you can check out the website, Jenny tells you, ArcadiaPublishing.com, and also our social media pages for book birthdays. You still doing book birthdays?
Yes.
All right, cool. So you can see them on Instagram, you can see them on Facebook, you can see it on Twitter at Zitter, you can see it on Zitter. Why do they just call it Zitter? That sounds kind of SpaceX-y, you know what I mean? So,
and now
the bluebird one,
TikTok as well.
Oh, TikTok,
it's exciting times on TikTok.
And if you want to talk to me and Jenny, have any questions, have any concerns, don't like something we did, I'll delete that email. But if you want to reach out to us via email, you can at arcadiaauthorconversations altogether@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, guys.